Suddenly a swarm of night bats crashed out of the swamp trees and swooped around them. They had leathery wings and insectile bodies with six thin legs bearing sharp claws. Two clutched Callista's hair, tugging it and fighting with each other as she thrashed them away. Luke drew his lightsaber and Callista yanked hers free. Luke clipped off the wings of a night bat even as more swirled in. Callista swung her lightsaber at the creatures with brute force. Her attack disturbed Luke. It was filled with a fury and a wild abandon he had never seen in her. She yelled at the night bats as if they were an incarnation of her greatest enemy. "It's not fair," she flashed her gaze at Luke. "I finally found you, and now I might have to give you up." She chopped with the blade in such an explosion of fury that she sliced through three of the night bats. "Leave us alone!" As she shouted at the bats, she unconsciously pushed. The remaining night bats spiraled away in confusion, shrieking into the night. Then Callista lowered her energy blade, slumping weakly in the aftermath of what she had done. Luke deactivated his own lightsaber and stared at her in amazement.
"I opened up for just a second," she said.
"I know. I could feel it."
Callista looked up at him, her eyes very afraid. "But it was the dark side, Luke. We both recognized it."
The growing magnificence of the Darksaber filled Bevel Lemelisk with joy as he watched from the distant Orko Skymine expeditionary ship. The latticework of main supports had taken shape, folding the durasteel net into a cylindrical tube like a gigantic wind tunnel. The Toral workers were the key to the success of the superlaser that could crack planets. They were Durga's masterstroke. The hive-minded little creatures scurried over the construction site, working cooperatively. If everything worked right, the superweapon would be built in a fraction of the time that space construction normally required. The greatest flaw of the Toro, Levelisk had found, was that they were distractible. When an asteroid soared too close to the construction site or a smuggler ship flew within view, the Toro focused their attention on the new site. When the fuzzy creatures returned to their work, many attached themselves to different stations, connecting the wrong girders together, hooking the wrong circuits. Studying the supports more closely, Lemelisk felt his heart sink into his paunchy stomach. A large section of the Darksaber outer framework was assembled incorrectly. The computer core receptacle was connected to the waste heat exhaust. The superlaser anchor points were 90 degrees apart from each other. He felt his stomach churning in dread that Durga would find out about the delay and order him to be killed again. The ice world of Hoth hung beneath its coterie of moons like a cracked snowball. Callista piloted their space yacht, following the coordinates Luke had given her. He leaned forward in the passenger seat, tingling with anticipation. "Down there, that's where Obi-Wan's spirit first came to me when I was nearly frozen in a blizzard. He told me to go to Dagobah to find Yoda. Han tried to convince me it was just a hallucination." Callista sat, subdued, gripping the controls. She had been reluctant to tamper with her locked Jedi powers ever since her brush with the dark side on Dagobah. Luke was concerned that her reticence and anxiety would do more damage than any of her actual failures had, because now she was afraid to try. Somehow, Luke had to dispel that fear. Callista stared at the ice planet as they skimmed through the misty atmosphere.
"I wish my master Jyn Octis would come to me in a vision. I'm sure he could offer some insight."
Luke didn't know how to respond, so he squeezed her hand. She looked at him with a mixture of annoyance and frustration.
"I'll be all right, Luke. I haven't given up."
"I'm glad to hear that. And down there is the next place to try."
Luke indicated the white pock glacier fields beneath their soaring yacht.
"This is where I really learned to fight. I had flown my X-Wing against the first Death Star, but here, during the Battle of Hoth against the Imperial Walkers, this is where I learned to be a warrior. I left the wreckage of Echo Base to find Yoda, and one of the first things he told me was that wars don't make a person great."
"They don't,"
Callista said.
"But sometimes you have to fight."
As they approached the line of rocky hummocks, Luke spotted a blackened hulk lying in the snow. "Hey, what's that ship?"
"Can't be a leftover crash from the battle. That was 9 years ago. This is something new." She brought their yacht down near the wreckage, close to the hidden shield doors that sealed off Echo Base's catacombs in the solid ice. Luke opened the uniform locker and removed the two insulated jumpsuits hanging beside a pair of full environment suits. They pulled on the uniforms, activating the body heaters and tugging on gloves. Their boots crunched on the ice-hard snow as they walked to the wrecked ship. Luke looked over at the snow-camouflaged opening of Echo Base. Maybe they took shelter there. He saw the blaster cannon turrets on either side of the shield door. Let's check this out, but be careful. As they approached the shield doors, the pair of blaster cannon emplacements standing like sentinels suddenly came to life. Look out! Callista shoved Luke out of the way. He dived to one side, using his Jedi powers to fling himself farther. Callista rolled, hitting the ground as the first blast seared out. The turret swiveled, targeting on Luke, and fired again. He leapt into the air, and the beam missed him, exploding one of the frozen rocks. Must be motion detectors, Luke. I'm gonna run and focus their targeting on me. You use your Jedi powers to knock out both weapons.
No! It's too...
But Callista was already on her way. Luke knew this was the way she did things. She made up her mind and then took action without considering the risks or even alternatives. As she sprinted in a zigzag pattern across the snow, both blaster cannon emplacements swiveled, locking in on her. Luke plunged forward until he landed in front of the cannon. Holding his lightsaber in one hand, he scrambled up the tower and slashed with the glowing blade, severing the barrel of the weapon. He threw himself onto the snow and scrambled to the second turret just as the damaged one fired. The second weapon targeted Callista. She danced to one side. The explosion was sufficient to hurl Callista into the air. Luke used his lightsaber to hack at the emplacement. The ominous barrel stuttered for a moment, seeking another target, then went dead.
Good work, Callista said as they brushed each other off. We're a team, even without my Jedi powers.
With a reluctant, heavy thud, the shield door began to rise up. Figures appeared in the partially open door.
Don't just stand there. Get inside, quick, before those creatures come back.
A dark-eyed man wearing the shadowy stains of beard stubble and the remnants of white armor stepped outside holding a blaster rifle. Beside him came a hairy feline alien with tufts of fur sprouting from his chin and fangs protruding below his lips. A Kathar, Luke recognized. Another human man, tall and broad-shouldered, stood within the main tunnel, gesturing for them to hurry. Only five of them had survived.
Seemed an easy way to make a few credits, said Burke,
a former stormtrooper who had deserted the Empire in the turmoil following the Battle of Endor.
I hooked up with these two Kathar, Nodon and Nonak.
The feline who had been at the door was joined by another. They appeared identical except for slight variations in fur color. Burke continued,
There's a huge black market price on wampa pelts, you know. So the Kathar brothers and I decided to set up big game expeditions. For a fee, we'd take hunters here to track down and kill the biggest game in the galaxy. Rich baron administrators like him.
Burke gestured to the tall, muscular man with chiseled features, a white smile, and hardened eyes. The muscular man introduced himself.
Jam Guldi, Baron Administrator of the Kelrodo Eye Gelatin Mines, and this is my aide.
He indicated a nervous-looking man with gray-blonde hair and faint wrinkles. Synodic. Burke, the stormtrooper, continued with his story.
This was our third run. The other two went smoothly. We would track the wampas, bag one or two, and then leave. By this time, the monsters had learned how to work together. We thought they were dumb brutes, but we were wrong. We came back and found our pilot slaughtered. They killed one of our guides and the other three clients. Luckily, we got to shelter in Echo Base here.
Jam Guldi picked up the story, businesslike and matter-of-fact.
That's when they blew up our ship.
We've been here for 4 days, no supplies, and those things are out there, waiting for us.
You can't all fit in our ship. Callista said, anticipating their next question. It's only a small yacht. But we can transmit a distress signal, get a rescue crew here within a day or so. Luke met Callista's gaze. Helping people was one of the primary responsibilities of a Jedi Knight. They decided they would all go together to Luke and Callista's craft.
We can make a dash for it, Burke said. We've only got 12 charges each left in our blasters.
The shield door opened, and freezing air and snow gusted in. As they approached their ship, Luke saw that the hatch stood open. Callista said, "Hey, I didn't leave the door like that."
The comm system had been torn to shreds. The panels ripped open with the silver scoring of claws. The navicomputer was gone, torn from its housing and smashed to a tangle of wires and broken chips. Terror took hold in the pit of Luke's stomach. He turned to the locker where the environment suits had hung and found that the snow creatures had slashed both suits, making them unusable. Then came a shout from outside and sudden blaster fire. Luke could barely distinguish the creatures. Their white pelts made them only a blur of movement, curving horns sweeping from their heads, claws like knives extended as they boiled up, slashing and tearing and roaring. Bert drew both his blaster pistols and fired, leaving a huge wampa dead in the snow with smoking holes in its fur. He tried to fire again, but one of his pistols had been drained dry. The wampas bellowed an odd howl that careened across the empty steps. Dromguldi fired carefully and precisely, taking out another wampa. One of the two Kathar shot indiscriminately, lancing the snowy expanse until his rifle also ran out of charge. Hearing an echoing roar that seemed somehow familiar, Luke turned to see a huge wampa standing on a rock outcropping, howling into the night as if directing the battle. This monster had only one arm. Its other ended in a cauterized stump. It slashed its single fistful of claws through the icy air as it saw the Jedi lightsaber. Chewbacca landed the Millennium Falcon in one of the exorbitantly priced docking bays of Nar Shaddaa, the planetoid in the Hutt system more familiarly known as Smuggler's Moon. In the grease-encrusted, machine-humming metropolis, R2 jacked into a tourist information kiosk, a thinly disguised directory of black market services and vendors. Chewbacca then went through 100 credits, bounced from one scrap of information to another, until, in a narrow, dim alley, he and R2 finally found a decrepit old slicer, whose face was a mass of warts and flaking skin. The slicer carried his own portable terminal and a laser welder, which he used to cut into the power sources and splice his input cables into computer systems, where he would work undetected for a few hours or a day, and then he would slip off to find another place to work.
"No, this thing," the slicer said. "Nothing for Durga."
The slicer scowled at his keyboard.
"I didn't say there aren't any. I just can't find the files. They must be coded or require passwords." "Wait a minute. I was looking for files about Durga. But let's do a broader-based search. Track down anybody who's selling things to Durga."
The slicer's fingers flew over the keypad.
"Yes, an Imperial customer, General Sulimar. He's apparently working with the Hutts. According to these files, this General Sulimar is a big boss in charge of everything the Hutts do around here."
If the Empire and the Hutts had indeed teamed up, they would make a formidable enemy. This threat was far worse than they had feared. The ice creatures lunged in a mass of white fur, spread claws, and flying blood.
"Watch your back, Callista!" Luke yelled.
He slashed his lightsaber as a white-furred monster bore down on her. Burke, the former stormtrooper, fired until he emptied his second blaster pistol. One of the Kathars, Nodon, fired useless bursts from his blaster rifle, the last trickle of charge. A huge wampa rose before him, knocking him to the snow. Nonak hissed in fury and leapt to Nodon's aid. He sprang onto the back of the wampa and slashed with his own claws, biting with sharp fangs into the wampa's neck. From the rocky outcropping where he directed the battle, the one-armed brute roared. The wampas came in, focused on a single target. They tore Nonak apart. Burke took a quick inventory.
"My blaster pistols are out of charge, but I have some makeshift spears. Nodon's rifle is drained. Dromguldi, what have you got left?"
The big game hunter inspected his weapon. 10 shots.
They all turn to see Synodic in the clutches of a bloodied wampa whose claws dripped with gore. Dromguldi fired three times in rapid succession, and the monster fell. Luke and Callista pulled out their lightsabers. Nodon yowled and threw himself upon the nearest wampa, but the others turned and fell upon him. The Khazar went down fighting. Burke thrust and jabbed his spears, but they were pitifully useless against the bloodthirsty wampas. The snow monsters swallowed him up. With his lightsaber, Luke sliced a towering creature in two. Dromguldi emptied his seven remaining shots, killing a wampa each time. He tossed the blaster rifle to the ground and laughed, his eyes bright, his tan face flushed. Come on! Get what's coming to you! The wampas came. The one-armed wampa lunged for Callista. She couldn't react fast enough. Luke yelled, "No!" and cut sideways with his lightsaber, putting all the force behind his swing. He cleaved the one-armed snow creature in half. The controls of the space yacht were smashed. The navicomputer was gone. The comm system was ripped out. As the wampas battered the hull of the space yacht with rocks, Luke and Callista set to work, removing dented or slashed panels and trying to cross-wire anything just to get them lifted off. Finally, Luke triggered the firing button, and the space yacht's engines roared to life at full power. They had no control. The ship lurched off the ground, plunging upward into the night. True to his word, Durga did provide Leia with access to one of his private information brokers. Gamorrean guards dragged a cart with creaking wheels into the hut dining hall, where carrion birds perched on ledges waiting for dropped food. A huge spiral-shaped mollusk shell filled the cart, its ridges worn and covered with algae. The emaciated hut, Korda, slithered forward to rap briskly on the shell with a stick. A fleshy appendage nudged out of the hole in the shell, protruding like a long tongue. The creature had a cluster of five milky white eyes on its smooth, rounded head.
"What do you want?"
the creature said. Korda glared at the shell creature.
"Durga the Hutt commands that you provide information to these guests. They need to know about Imperial activities."
The information broker grumbled.
"Information on Imperial activities, eh? Couldn't narrow it down a little, I suppose."
"Yes," Leia said. "We want to know what the remnants of the Empire are up to right now."
"Oh, good. That's much easier. Do you require a specific listing of every individual's activities? I have records of 5 billion or so. Or would generalizations be good enough?"
"Generalizations would be sufficient." The smooth head slipped back into the dark opening, and Leia heard muffled rummaging sounds as the creature stirred about. Then the head popped up again and turned its eye cluster toward Leia.
"You're in luck. Plenty of schemes afoot. The forces have been unified, squabbling warlords executed. Starship construction increased tenfold. The Imperial military forces have clustered around a single commander."
"Do you know what their plans are?"
"The scattered Imperial fleets have come together with such a build-up of weapons. They are almost certainly planning a major assault against the New Republic. Specific target unknown, so don't bother to ask. May I go now?"
"Wait," Han interrupted. "Who is this new Imperial commander?"
All right.
The information broker slithered back into the shell. It rummaged around for an interminable time before it finally popped out again.
"Dala. The person in charge of the Imperial forces is Admiral Dala. I have no more information. Good night."
Han looked sickened. "But how could it be Dala? She's dead." Leia met his eyes. "Apparently not." In Admiral Dalla's hands, the remnants of the Empire were a machine, a massive, cohesive engine being tuned to peak performance. Cogs spun, components fit together. Armament factories received resources from other systems and processed them into additional weapons. TIE fighters, blast boats, AT-ATs, and major structural pieces of new Star Destroyers. Dalla reveled in the progress report she received. Now aboard her great black ship, the Nighthammer, which she had seized when the warlord Delvartis' second-in-command Cronus agreed to join her growing force, she progressed from system to system, knitting together once-scattered allegiances, drawing tight the Imperial net. She paced around the Nighthammer's ready room, a private strategy chamber that was itself as big as the entire command deck on a Victory-class Star Destroyer.
"As I see it, Admiral," Pelion said slowly, "we have two obvious primary targets. The first is Coruscant, the capital, the most heavily populated and heavily fortified world in the New Republic."
"I agree," Dalla said. "However, the battle for Coruscant will be long and bloody. We will lose a large portion of our new fleet if we choose that as our first target. What I'm looking for, Pelion, is a decisive victory. We need a morale-building strike that will set the rebels reeling and make our own troops ecstatic with renewed patriotism. At that point, we can come back with twice our strength and hammer Coruscant to rubble. I have such a target in mind. Are we thinking of the same one?" Her green eyes fixed on his. Pelion answered without hesitation.
"Yavin 4, where the new Jedi training center is located."
Dalla's smile congratulated him. "Yes. The Jedi Knights are powerful symbols to the rebels, and they will be powerful enemies if we let them proliferate."
"I suggest that we diversify our strike. Allow Colonel Cronus, as you know he is an excellent commander, to take his victory fleet and strike at dozens of minor targets so that the rebels believe they're under attack at all points. This will cause damage far beyond the risk, and it will add to the turmoil and confusion of our own surprise attack."
Dalla nodded. "We'll begin at once." Kip Duron hunched forward in front of the control panel, his dark eyes narrowed as he scanned the enemy forces arrayed around them. Dorskiddy 1 piloted their stolen Imperial ship into the massed battle fleet. His slender, olive hands fidgeted nervously. His yellow eyes stared in astonishment and fear, unable to believe what Kip had talked him into doing. "There certainly are a lot of ships," he said. "We'll be blown out of space the moment they suspect us." Kip waved his hand dismissively. "They won't suspect anything. This ship has all the right markings." Since they were both skilled pilots, Kip and Dorskiddy 1 had been able to figure out how to fly the ship they'd appropriated from an unguarded outer station. As a huge supply convoy passed the depot, the Imperial activity had swirled around them, obviously on the verge of an enormous demonstration of military strength. Over the past few days, Kip and Dorskiddy 1 had penetrated deeper and deeper into the core systems. Kip had watched with growing horror as he realized just how far along the Empire's plans were. They had seen weapons depots, giant factories that spewed out TIE fighters by the hundreds, construction yards with skeletal frames of Imperial Star Destroyers in progress.
"I still think we should get out of here," Dorskiddy 1 said. "We need to bring this information back to the New Republic."
Kip shook his head. "Now we've got to see exactly what they're up to." The comm system crackled.
"Shuttle pilot, hurry up. Here's a vector for you to follow. The Admiral would be most displeased if late arrivals disturbed their speeches."
Dorskiddy 1 stared blankly at the speaker, but Kip instantly responded.
"On our way. Apologies for the inconvenience."
He snapped off the comm system.
"They're going to let us in."
Other ships clustered around a staggeringly immense grid of landing platforms and docking bays. The coordinates took them to a central platform where thousands of ships had already gathered. Figures streamed toward the open mall area of the Nexus station, a room for an audience of tens of thousands. Kip rummaged in the shuttle's uniform bin and pulled out two sets of overalls with the insignia of the repair team assigned to the outer depot where they had stolen the shuttle.
"Here, we'll wear these and nobody will know the difference."
In the distant center of the open space, a speaking deck had been raised to enclose a podium, tall amplifiers, and a turbo lift that could bring guests onto the stage without forcing them to pass through the packed crowds. A gaunt, trim old man was speaking in a precise voice.
He looks familiar, Kip said. Stormtrooper guards appeared out of nowhere, their white armor clacking.
Silence while Vice Admiral Pelion is speaking.
The main phase of our assault will be a decisive attack on the new training facility, where the rebels are attempting to create a commando force of their own sorcerers, the Jedi Knights. Our fleet will strike their training center and destroy it before the rebels even know that we are on the march.
Kip joined in with the cheering audience so as not to draw attention to himself.
Now, allow me to present the one person responsible for bringing us all together.
The towering video screen showed a figure emerging slim and tall, with a mane of hair that looked like copper fire.
Admiral Dalla! Kip stared in disbelief and horror.
Dalla had captured him and Han Solo after they escaped from the spice mines of Kessel, and because she had deemed Kip a worthless prisoner, she had ordered his execution. Kip had thought to destroy her in the Cauldron Nebula using the Sun Crusher to ignite a cluster of hot blue suns. But she had miraculously escaped to attack the Maw installation again. And she had died there. Kip was sure of it.
No. Dalla has to be dead.
People near him turned, and two stormtrooper guards appeared at his side, blasters drawn.
Let me see your work assignment and papers,
one of them said. Kip slid a hand into the pocket of his overalls, ostensibly to remove his work assignment card, and wrapped his fingers around his lightsaber handle. He could feel Dorskitty 1 prepare himself as well.
You can all be proud of what you are about to do.
Yes,
Kip thought.
Yes, I am.
He unsheathed the lightsaber, and the energy blade sprang out. In a single sweeping arc, he slashed off the stormtrooper's armored hand, taking the blaster pistol with it. He followed through to strike down the second trooper. Dorskitty 1's own lightsaber came out ablaze as he struck down the third stormtrooper. The audience around them recoiled in surprise and panic. Even from the distance, Dalla could see the unmistakable glare of lightsabers.
Jedi Knights!
Kill the Jedi Knights!
Stormtroopers clustered around them, firing blaster rifles. Dorskitty 1's lightsaber deflected the first bolt high into the ceiling while the second shot burned through the back of a fleeing lieutenant.
Don't fight, Kip shouted. It'll only slow us down. Run!
The size of the crowd worked in their favor, and they disappeared in the confusion of the panicking mob. Kip and Dorskitty 1 rocketed off the landing pad with repulsor lifts and sublight engines at full power in a pinwheeling escape. Their tumbling course made them difficult targets for the Imperial ships.
Launch into hyperspace, fast!
Dorskitty 1 punched up a readout.
The coordinates for Comb are programmed. We can send an alarm from my homeworld.
Fine, fine.
They vanished into star lines as the Empire scrambled after them.
As their damaged ship limped away from Hoth, Callista and Luke worked side by side, desperately trying to repair each system failure before another one occurred. They plunged headlong into the broken asteroid field at the fringes of the Hoth system, with only minimal shields and virtually no control over their course. The asteroids began to grow thicker around them, battering at the ship. In a shower of sparks and burned circuits, the life support systems gasped and died. The atmosphere began bleeding away noticeably, and their body heat did little to warm the cabin as the cold of space leached it away. Luke and Callista studied the environment suits the Wampas had shredded. Using repair kits and other patches, they managed to piece together one of them, but only one. Luke took Callista's hand.
You have to wear it, Callista. I won't let you sacrifice yourself.
I have no intention of it. I can go deep into a Jedi trance, slow down my metabolism, and use the Force to try to contact someone.
Yes, Callista said, defeated. We have to try.
She slowly pulled the environment suit over her long legs. Luke's eyes closed as he descended into a deep trance. He centered his thoughts on a tangible shout along the lines of Force that connected everything in the cosmos.
Leia.
Leia.
Exhausted from the tension of the diplomatic mission to Durga's fortress and the knowledge that Admiral Dalla was still alive and gearing up for another assault against the New Republic, Leia sat in her comfortable seat in the diplomatic shuttle. Han piloted away from Nal Hutta, avoiding the smuggler's moon and arrowing out to open space where Akbar's and Wedge's fleets waited. Suddenly a thought lanced through Leia. She sat bolt upright and gasped. Han turned from the pilot's seat, an expression of concern on his face.
Hey, Leia, what is it?
It's Luke. He's in trouble. The diplomatic shuttle pulled into the receiving bay of Wedge's escort frigate Yavaris. Chewbacca was waiting for Han and Leia, having returned with R2-D2 on the Millennium Falcon after their trip to the smuggler's moon. In the war room, a coded transmission brought up a holographic simulacrum of Admiral Akbar. Leia told everyone what she had found out about Dalla, and Chewbacca gave his report. Leia glanced from Wedge's square-jawed face to Akbar's glassy, unreadable Calamarian eyes.
I want all of our teams on yellow alert from this moment on. The only advantage we have is they don't know we know what they're up to. Wait for your report from General Medine's mission and act accordingly if I haven't returned. I trust you all. Now, I have to go save my brother.
Leia sat strapped into her seat, still concentrating. She had followed Luke's thoughts, his gradually fading request for assistance. Her force abilities had been sharpened through Luke's training, and though she couldn't give Han coordinates, she could take him in the right general direction. As they closed in on Luke's ship, she was able to find its precise location. With the Vulcan's tractor beam, they took the ruined yacht in tow and brought their airlocks together so that Han, Leia, and Chewie could breach the outer hatch of Luke's ship and enter the darkened wreck. They found the two motionless bodies in the back chamber. Luke squatted on the floor like a statue, and Callista clung to him in a tattered and failing life support suit. Luke looked frozen solid. His skin had a colorless, flat texture like wax. Callista gave a rattling groan, shifting in her slick suit. Powdery frost crumbled from her joints.
"Let's get them into the Falcon," Han said. "Chewie, carry Luke. Leia and I will get Callista."
Callista revived first. With a change into warm clothing and generous cups of stim tea, she recovered enough to insist on helping nurse Luke back to health. In his deep trance, he had depleted his reserves, keeping himself at the edge of death when the life support had ceased to function. Callista's gray eyes were red-rimmed as she took a polysponge soaked in warm water and bathed Luke's face, his forehead, his neck. She whispered to Leia,
"I had to watch him as my own supplies dwindled. As he dwindled,"
she shuddered.
"I held him, but I couldn't touch him. I told him so many things."
She reached out with her fingertip, gently caressing Luke's cheek. Suddenly his blue eyes snapped open, and he took a deep breath.
"You're safe now, Luke," Leia said. "We'll take you back to the Jedi Academy, where you can relax and recover."
New Republic Admiral Krix Medine and his commander, Trandia, locked down their A-Wing fighters on the rocky surface of the small asteroid in the Hoth asteroid belt. Medine had successfully tracked Durga to the huge construction project. Medine and Trandia wore spacesuits like self-contained mobile ships. Standing on the surface of the asteroid, they checked their complement of detonators, life support packs, and surveillance systems, then leapt upward, tearing free of the asteroid's negligible gravity. Momentum carried them across the gulf of space toward the super-weapon under construction. As he and Trandia drifted like tiny pieces of rubble toward the giant cylindrical assembly, Medine had a good deal of time to stare at the Hutt project through his faceplate. The design concerned him. He was aware that the Hutts had copied the Death Star plans from the Imperial Information Center, but this was no Death Star. It appeared instead to be no more than the super laser, a straight cylinder that would serve as a destructive offensive weapon. If this weapon were completed, the Hutts would use it against any system that failed to pay them for protection. And the construction seemed nearly finished. The two suited figures floated in, specks against the kilometers-long assembly. Medine spoke in a focused line-of-sight beam at Trandia.
We may be able to cripple the weapon if we can get inside and place our detonators in appropriate spots. From the looks of it, we'd better not wait too long. The huts are ready to go.
Their magnetic boots made contact with the armor plates, and they clambered like insects along the hull. Medine was surprised to see that many of the hull segments were mismatched and loose, welded together but leaving gaps and uneven seams. He was appalled by the reprehensible workmanship. At least it would be easy to get inside. They entered a darkened and half-completed corridor. Finally, they reached a bulkhead door that allowed them to pass deeper inside the construction. The engine sections were a great pulsing dungeon filled with smells of oil and coolant, hissing steam that might have been intentionally vented or just leaking from reactor cores. Guards patrolled the catwalks above, boar-like Gamorreans and a hodgepodge of alien creatures. Medine checked the blaster pistol and the four detonators he carried, then gestured that he and Trandia should split up. Trandia darted from cover to scant cover, working her way over to the shielding wall that blocked the engines. Medine moved to the mesh surrounding the propulsion computers. He took a cutting tool from his equipment pouch. If he could slice through the protective fence, he could plant detonators that would destroy the computers driving the superweapon. The alarm came on as soon as he severed the crystalline cords, and the guards scrambled to discover the nature of the disturbance. Suddenly, Trandia stood up from her hiding place near the wall of the engine compartment. She waved her arms and yelled to draw attention to herself. Run! She shouted at Medine. The guards pushed toward her position, and as they reached her, Trandia triggered every one of the detonators she carried. The explosion took out the entire complement of guards, as well as Trandia herself. While it barely damaged the engine's containment wall, lights flickered and went out. The shockwave knocked Medine flat. He shook his head, gasping for breath, and struggled to his feet. The mission was paramount. They had to succeed. He lurched down the dimly lit corridor and stumbled right into another group of alien guards. Nadine's heart sank. Trandia had given her life, hoping to cause irreparable damage, hoping to let her commander escape. But she had accomplished neither. The guards hauled him off to Durga the Hutt. It was the middle of the night shift on the escort frigate Yavaris, and General Wedge Antilles sat quietly in the command chair, relaxed but watchful. The tension was thick. The yellow alert status had been uninterrupted for a day. They had heard nothing, no word of an Imperial strike, no report from Krix Medine, and it was beginning to wear on them. Kwee-Zooks crept up behind Wedge and squeezed his shoulders with her long, pale blue fingers. He looked into her deep indigo eyes.
"Couldn't sleep either?"
he asked. She shook her head, and her feathery, pearlescent hair flickered.
"The waiting is so hard," she said.
Kwee-Zooks had been brainwashed as a child to become a weapons designer for the Empire. In Maw installation, she had helped design the original Death Star with Bevel Emelisk, and she had developed the Sun Crusher by herself. She remembered little of that, however, because young Kip Duran, flooded with dark side powers, had erased much of her memory in a disastrous attempt to make it impossible for anyone to recreate such weapons. Despite her many ordeals, Kwee, now the New Republic's mission scientist, retained a childlike sense of wonder at discovering new things. Wedge loved her more and more each day that he spent at her side.
Wedge nodded.
"Much as I hate war, at times like this, I almost wish something would just happen."
And it did. Krix Medine's distress signal came in at emergency priority on the transmitter. Wedge knew that General Medine would send the signal only in the most extreme circumstances.
"We've got to go pull him out."
The comm activated. A message was coming in from Admiral Akbar on the Mon Calamari Star Cruiser.
"This may be the beginning of the overall attack."
"Yes, Admiral. Shall we deploy the fleet? We can home in on Medine's distress and get there at top speed. We don't..."
Before Wedge could finish, another broad-spectrum message came in on the comm.
"This is Kip Duran with an urgent message to the New Republic military."
Wedge flinched. Beside him, Kwee held her composure, but he noticed her stiffen. Kwee claimed to have forgiven Kip, but the overeager Jedi Knight still unnerved both of them.
A massive Imperial strike force is ready to launch in the next day or so. Admiral Dalla is commanding this fleet. Their main target is said to be Yavin 4. We request any assistance possible.
So, it's a two-pronged attack. I will take the Galactic Voyager and head to Yavin 4. You go and rescue General Medin.
Understood, Admiral, Wedge said.
Dorsk 81 and Kip Duron landed their Imperial shuttle on Yavin 4 and rushed through narrow jungle paths to the tall Masasi ruin near the river, where the Jedi trainees worked together, nearly 30 in all. Kirana T, the warrior woman from Dathomir, and the older, somewhat confused hermit from Bespin, Streen, worked to haul fallen rocks from a portion of the temple that had collapsed. They used Jedi powers to lift broken slabs out of the way. Kam Solyusar, the hard-bitten Jedi veteran, sternly watched the activities, directing the work of lesser-trained Jedi students who had arrived at the Praxium in the last year. The silvery-haired Jedi scholar Tian spotted Kip and Dorsk 81 first.
Kip! Dorsk 81, you've returned to us. Good. We could use some help.
Where's Master Skywalker? Kip said.
He and Callista left more than a week ago.
The Jedi Academy is in great danger, Dorsk 81 blurted out. Admiral Dalla has assembled a new Imperial fleet, and Yavin 4 is their target. The Star Destroyers could be here any moment.
No,
Streen shook his head as he gazed up into the pale blue sky.
No, they're already here.
A shower of bright lines danced through the upper atmosphere toward the jungles. TIE fighters swooped overhead as the Jedi trainees scrambled for shelter. Laser cannons shot from the Imperial ship, setting tall trees alight and blasting the old temple to rubble. The warrior woman Kirana T stood out in the open near the piles of rubble the Jedi trainees had so meticulously removed from the ruins. The TIE fighters saw her and fired, but she gestured with her hand. Using the Force as a sling, she snatched one of the squarish boulders cut by Masasi's slaves thousands of years before, and hurled it with all her Jedi strength. The boulder flew through the air and smashed one of the TIE fighters' flat power arrays. It careened to one side and the ship exploded in the trees. Kam Solyusar stood on the other side of the clearing, and using the Force, he too began hurling boulders at the remaining two TIE fighters. All the Jedi trainees had the idea now, and an avalanche of boulders hammered the two ships out of the sky. Both exploded in mid-flight to the cheers of the embattled Jedi students. As the second wave of four TIE fighters came immediately after, Streen did not pick up boulders or other weapons with the Force. He used the air itself, moving molecules in the atmosphere to summon storm currents that achieved hurricane strength. The air currents buffeted the TIE fighters right and left, forcing the pilots to concentrate on flying and keeping them from shooting. A pair of TIE bombers came in low from behind. Kip shouted a warning. The first bomber cruised over the temple and let three concussion missiles fall out of its bombing bay. But Kip pushed upward with the Force, visualizing the three dropped missiles. He nudged the explosives back up into the bomber's bay, where they detonated. The second TIE fighter dropped a single missile, then seeing the fate of his partner, shot off at top speed. The missile detonated, sending a rumble that shook the Temple of the Blue Leaf Cluster. This old structure won't last much longer, Kip shouted. We've got to get back to the Great Temple. That's more defensible. As they reached the giant pyramid that had once been fortified as a rebel base, Dorsk 81 saw that their desperate defense at the temple had served a secondary purpose, a diversion for the Imperial forces, who now thought the Temple of the Blue Leaf Cluster was the Jedi stronghold. The TIE fighters and bombers concentrated their forces there. Despite the fear that rattled through him, Dorsk 81 felt an exhilaration and a camaraderie with the other Jedi. He was fighting for something meaningful. For most of his life as a clone, he had never felt he had a choice in his destiny. Now he had made one. To be a Jedi Knight. Deep in the war room on the second level of the pyramid, the Jedi Knights gathered as they heard the echoing thuds of the constant attack. Tian shook her silvery head.
They have a communications jamming net in place.
Kip Duran paced the enclosed room. The Star Destroyers are actually the greatest threat. Tian, were you able to determine how many ships there are in orbit?
17, I believe. Imperial class.
I have a suggestion, Dorskady One swallowed. We cannot succeed if we fight small battles individually, but together we are more powerful than the sum of our parts. We can use the Force to move the Star Destroyers away. The collective gasp among the trainees was a mixture of disbelief and delight.
It's too much, Kamsul Yasar said. There are too many.
Dorskady One was not flustered.
Size matters not. How many times has Master Skywalker told us that? At first, we didn't believe we could lift a pebble or a leaf.